first time in a really long time, and maybe, I mean, you're talking decades, people were talking about the White Sox being cool. Like, being a White Sox fan was cool because of all the things coming out of that clubhouse. And Spiegs, I heard you talking about it earlier, and you couldn't have been more dead on. When I was even at spring training this year, there was a level of confidence that was coming out of that clubhouse that I remember going on the air at spring training and being like, man, these guys really believe. Like, it's different because you would go down there in February and March, and it'd be kind of this perfunctory performance of, oh, well, we think that we have a chance. And it wasn't that. Like, the confidence and conviction of Tim Anderson, you could feel it inside that entire clubhouse. Mm-hmm. And as the season went on and it looked like they were going to be one of the better teams in the American League, it grew and grew and grew. What bothers me on a fundamental level as a fan of this is we were told to be patient. We were told that there was a plan in place to make this team a winner. We were told that you will be rewarded for your patience. And that's still a possibility, as you guys pointed out. Strategically, there might not be any issues, although the game has changed tremendously in the last 10 years. All of this felt like that was snatched. That movement towards the White Sox being good, cool, and relevant was all being taken away in that moment. And it was hard for me, and you guys know that I have a lot of affection for Rick Hahn. I genuinely like him as a person. It was hard for me to sit there and watch him lie to us for 5 minutes at the beginning of that press conference. Oof, yesterday.
Man, yeah, that was painful, Lawrence. And look, I tweeted it yesterday. I was listening to you yesterday. And there's been nobody more connected and more passionate about that particular team and rebuild. And no offense to you, Dan. I mean, you've been, but it's like, just like, I just feel Lawrence's connection just because of so many other layers of it. You know, the double duty classic, the yep. fact that your grandfather played and just the way that, and just the entire thing and your pride in being a Southsider and the fact that this entire thing has engendered so much goodwill.
Yes.
And that's the part that got crapped on yesterday. And there's an arrogance at the top of the organization that where they think that, you know, as long as we win, then everybody's going to be fine and everybody's going to be satisfied. And that's true about a certain number of people. But baseball is about so much more than just the winning. It's about the connection. It's about the generational feel. And in this case, when you've watched it for 5 years, it's about your emotional relationship with the thing. We've been there before when Blackhawks fans in 2009 said, wait till Taves and Kane start to get to show the world what they got. When Cub fans in 2014 and 15 yep. said, have you seen Javi? Have you seen Schwarber? What, they traded up in the draft to get this guy at number four. Or they didn't trade up, but they took Schwarber at four way before people, just because they love him so much and everybody gets excited. That's the way fans have felt, and not just White Sox fans. Cub fans who've been disgruntled in this town have come around. Lots of national people. And that goodwill got crapped on yesterday. And the arrogant belief is that everybody will be fine. Everybody will be fine. As long as you win, everybody will be fine. And it's just not really how it works in terms of how it feels for others. But I don't think they really care.
No, there will be some recovery. There will be some healing and some re-embrace after being knocked back on our heels. But it doesn't change the fact that even in winning, it's never going to feel quite the same.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of truth to what you're saying about that, Dan. And what's interesting to me is I think there are a couple of flashpoints for this group of White Sox. And I think one of the main ones is the episode of Tim Anderson chucking the bat early in the season in 2019. And a lot of old school White Sox fans being like, oh, I don't know if I dig that. And then they listened to Tim and they were like, well, wait a minute. Why shouldn't he be able to enjoy this? And I feel like that was a turning point for White Sox fans to who have maybe been afraid to embrace some of this change that was going on inside the organization. And with Tim in particular, they were like, no, that's our guy. And if he wants to express himself, he was talking to the bench. Mm-hmm. If he wants to express himself, then I'm with them. And I felt like from that point on, we saw White Sox fans, like old school, like the gritty old White Sox fan was like, I dig this. Like, this is fun. Like, this is okay. And then you add in personalities like Aloy to the mix, and you saw Moncada turn into a five-war player in front of you. All this stuff with swag, and then all of a sudden, Luis Robert falls from the sky. And you're like, oh, my God, what's that? Like, that seems like it's a whole lot of fun. And even those guys that are predisposed to being baseball police, like McCann, like, even a guy like that kind of was like, you know, this is all right. Like, we do this, and I like the way that we do it. All of that growth, it just felt like all of the things that had been accomplished by this were just done. And, like, I'll go back to the Rick thing, and I'm going to spend a lot of time talking about Rick today. The other part that's so frustrating for me as a fan of the White Sox, and particularly with the management group, not the ownership group, but the management group on this, is it finally seemed like they were open to seeing what the fan base saw. We saw what happened against Cleveland. We saw what happened in Oakland. And yes, what we thought we got was, oh, they saw it too. Oh, the fact that Ricky couldn't manage his way out of those situations, the general manager saw and acted swiftly, acted in a way that projected a team that was trying to win a championship. And I know that that's what they're going to drape themselves in, that this move is another step towards us being a championship team. You hired the owner's buddy. That's it. That's all this is. No one else was going to bring him in. You can talk to anyone you want around baseball. There's zero. No one that had zero. That guy on their list of managers. So if that means that Jerry Reinsdorf is the smartest guy in the room, so be it. But I doubt it, because the way that he goes about hiring managers and the way that he's gone about hiring the last couple of managers tells you that it's not even baseball related. And to see that guy get another opportunity just because that's his dog is a betrayal that's hard for me to overcome.
Yeah, it's great stuff, man. The fact that they did see what we saw and they did make that move. They had the courage to make that move and get rid of a good guy, a liked guy in that clubhouse in Ricky, because they knew they needed to take the next step. And now they'll pretend that this is what they had in mind. But yesterday, Rick couldn't really pretend that this is what he had in mind. I just want to share one other thing with you guys. I don't know how much this has been out there. Maybe you guys knew it. But in the wake of the George Floyd incident, several organizations, lots of companies, and the White Sox were one of them, had virtually an organization-wide Zoom where they allowed employees to talk about how they were feeling, to voice what they thought about the culture within their organization and any concerns that they might have had. And I've spoken to a couple different people over the last couple days about it, and they just how inclusive they thought it was and how good it made them feel to be part of an organization, a progressive organization like that, that was just going to listen, that was willing to listen. And that's the expectation for people in the organization of everybody, including the manager. So just because you're 76 and you're a Hall of Famer and a made guy, people are expecting you to come in and listen. And I don't know how up he is for doing that on a daily basis of actually listening. Because if he's not going to do that, then you're going to have some disgruntled people. And I personally believe that disgruntled people do not perform at their best. And that would be a damn shame.
You said it. That's why I talk about a workplace, and I talk about what he thinks his level of authority has to be for him to be successful. Mm-hmm. And what we know is managers now have less authority than they used to have. Managers don't swagger their big pot belly and fungo bat all over, and this is my dugout and my clubhouse. It's just not how it works anymore. It's all partnership and relationship and understanding of a larger vision, and it goes in both directions. It's not just the guy above him in the management suite. It's the players below having their, or what used to be seen as below, being seen more as equals and having their own degree of agency. And on a level beyond whether it's racial or cultural, there is a new understanding and equality in the workplace, especially at the highest levels of professional sports. And I don't know if Tony La Russa is ready to give up that level of what he was used to as the manager authority.
Or what he's expecting, because he was put in place by the owner. Yep. The fact that he can jump over the general manager and the president of the team. He can jump over them because he's clearly jumped over them when it came to the decision that was made. Rick can say all he wants about, well, this needs to be Tony's day. You could tell by looking at that man that he had been usurped, that this decision was not necessarily his. And you can also tell by his words that this was a fait accompli a long time ago. And to think that they couldn't even have an actual job search for a job that I think would be highly coveted by someone who wants to have some fun, win some games, and change a culture around to a winning culture. This job would have been great to have. And now they've just kind of given it to a dude. And Dan, the stuff that you're saying, guys like this, I think that it's hard for them to change. I'm not going to say that it's impossible, because there have been some guys that have moved even just a little bit. Even a guy like Nick Saban has moved a little bit towards that. So I'm not going to say that it's impossible. But it if you look at what his history has been and some of the people that he has commiserated with throughout his career, guys that he thinks are great leaders, he doesn't strike me as being a guy that is willing to give up that role and that power very easily.
Yeah, and it's one thing to say it on a day like yesterday after you've had conference calls enforcing the fact that you have to say it. It's got to be another to live with it over 162 games.
Every day you show up in that park, it's different. And it's not the same when you sit as the oracle in your office there. And you know, Joe Maddon started to understand that a little bit. You know, Maddon came up differently, and Maddon, you know, talked a lot about the guys from whom he learned. These were old school guys, but Joe Maddon learned about the relationship aspect. He learned about empowering his players, and he talks about it to this day. You know, and that's another guy who might be so-so as a tactician, but does understand some of the soft stuff and how to make all that work. You can change. You can adapt. It's possible. But like you say, Spiegs, it takes commitment, concentration, and a tremendous amount of intellectual energy. You can't be lazy in any way. It is not easy to do, to have yourself present and mindful of that in the headspace all the time. It's very easy to fall back into old habits.
Yeah, I love. There's very little I love more than an old successful person who is still open to evolving. I always think of when I used to watch the sports writers back in the day on Sports Channel, when Mully was the young wisecracker, or
sure,
Rick Tellinger was the young wisecracker, whatever
it was.
Yeah, man. But it's like Robert Parrish got busted with pot, and I remember it wasn't Joust. I think it was Anderson. It was Dave Anderson saying, look, Robert Parrish is a respected old guy.
I mean, Bill Gleason?
It was Gleason. Yeah. Robert Parrish is a respected, smart guy, capable teammate. If he wants to smoke a little pot, so what? What's the big deal? Maybe I should try it.
Well, you know? that's from the same guy who would bring a beer in a sock into the press box.
Right, but it's like, if you can have the humility to say, you know what, times have changed. If I was 30, maybe I'd be doing that. Tony doesn't strike me as that dude, man.
No, and you don't even have to reach for that example. There's an example, right? Dusty Baker. Baker, at every stop, has become a better manager.
Correct.
He's learned things. At every stop, he's been notably better.
He listens
to guys.
You guys
just had Terry Bores on.
Yeah.
If you go back and read some of the stuff that Terry wrote about Jordan and see the guy that he is now, it's clearly that there's the opportunity for people to change if they are willing to. I have a lot of doubt that Tony is one of those dudes, especially when you are given that power by the guy who's in charge of the team. That's one of my biggest issues.
Let's watch the coaching staff carefully. Let's look for who those guys are who can really relate to the players and the pitchers specifically. So when Tony says, well, he didn't look good to me, the other guy can say, no, he looks fine. This is what he does or doesn't do. Like he can, and who else on that coaching staff is ready should the intellectual energy not be there for Tony La Russa at some point.
I have delayed you guys' weekend long enough. It was wonderful chatting baseball with you two fine gentlemen. Do yourselves a favor and enjoy yourselves this weekend. Stay out of trouble, and I will talk to you on Monday.
Thanks, Lawrence.
Sounds good. Dan, thanks for having me. By the way, Jim Leland and Jerry Hairston Jr. on Inside the Clubhouse tomorrow morning with me and Bruce.
All right, good. Cigarettes for everyone. That is Matt Spiegel and Dan Bernstein. You can catch Dan Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. until noon. We've got a lot of work to do, and there's a lot of things that I want to talk about as it pertains to the White Sox, and I was glad those guys stuck around, and we were able to have, I think, a really good conversation about a lot of these different issues. Don't worry, it is a Bears Friday, and we're going to take care of you there, too. This hour is being brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their website at 56David.com. That's 56David.com. Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
As I was saying earlier, it feels like quite the backwards move. And I know there are a lot of people like, well, what if he wins? I mean, I hope for the guys that are on the roster that he wins. I just know that I'm struggling with this. I don't know how anyone could see this as a move forward. I also don't like that it isn't what the general manager said he wanted. I don't like that. I don't like that if the White Sox were trying to get away from insular hiring, that this is the most insular hire that they could make. The guy who's friends with the owner. The guy who's been friends with the owner. The guy who's trying to redeem a firing that happened 36 years ago. To hire someone who doesn't even really believe the same things that the general manager espouses to believe. That's before we get into, I think that La Russa is a reprehensible person. Before we get into that, it's the baseball thing that I'm struggling with.
Make me a bicycle clown!
Welcome in. My name is Lawrence Holmes. I'm here with you until 2 o'clock. Here's what we have planned for you. JJ Stankovic is going to join me around 12:40. He and I are going to talk about the Bears. Joe Ostrowski is going to join me at 1 o'clock. We are going to talk about a little bit of everything because I want to pick his brain on some betting stuff that's going to go on inside the NFL and with the Bears in particular. I want to see if there's any change in the odds for the White Sox now that they have Tony La Russa as their manager. We had a really great transition segment, and that kind of ate up the first segment of the show. I don't mind that. I think it's actually a good thing when those things happen organically. So I need to take a break, but I want you to stay there. Why? Because I want you to hear from the general manager of the White Sox, and we need to have a discussion about that. And we're going to do that next here on The Score.
Danny Parkins, afternoons 2 to 6 on The Score.
Rick Hahn, the guy who built the most talented Sox team since the World Series team, doesn't get to pick the guy to run the games because the ex-announcer who they made general manager fired the owner's friend 34 years ago? Like, that's just not how good organizations do business.
Listen to Danny Parkins on your ride home 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. On radio.com. Sports Station.
This segment is brought to you by Toro Snowblowers.
This is Andrew Bogish with a Radio.com Sports Minute, sponsored by NHTSA. Never try to beat a train across the tracks. Stop. Trains can't. If you thought former Rockets GM Daryl Morey was blacklisted from the NBA, you're wrong. And if you thought baseball cared about the Astros cheating scandal, you're apparently wrong as well. Almost immediately after stepping down in Houston, Morey is about to run the Sixers. Maybe his pro-Hong Kong tweet last October, which cost the NBA hundreds of millions of dollars with China, is why time ran out in Houston. But getting the Philly job this quickly shows Morey's in good standing with the league as a whole. AJ Hinch is about to be the Tigers' new manager immediately after his one-year suspension for the Astros cheating scandal ended. No matter which story you believe in Houston, Hinch didn't do his job well. But here he is, hired at first chance, so I guess baseball isn't that mad at the Astros. I'm Andrew Bogus.
Inspired by State Farm's surprisingly great rates.
It's so cheap.